This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk here on the Sports Talk Media Network, coming to you once again from the Bridgestone Arena in downtown Nashville, site of the SEC basketball tournaments. As happy a day as it was for the Gamecocks yesterday, with the money flowing and the victory over Arkansas, complete opposite today. You know, we talked about matchups. Matchups are crucial in basketball. Sometimes you run up against a team you just don't match up well against. Saw that earlier in the year when the Gamecocks were drilled by Auburn at Auburn, lost by 40. Lamont Paris called that an anomaly in his opinion. Just felt like his team was much better than they played that night and would play Auburn a much better game today. Not the case at all. 86-55, the final. The Tigers beat the Gamecocks every which way you can beat them. Outshot them, out-rebounded them, beat them up in the paint, turned them over twice as much, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not a whole lot of expert analysis needed to diagnose this one. Auburn is just better. They're deeper. They're bigger. They can score inside. They can score outside. They're kind of a complete team, I would say, Chris Bergen, as Chris Bergen joins us from the Bergie Palace. They're a complete team. That's why they're considered a threat to win the national championship, to get into the NCAA tournament and make a run. Bruce Pearl's got a heck of a team, and he showed it again today.
Yeah, you hit a nail on the head, Phil, in terms of matchups. And for whatever reason, the Gamecocks and Auburn, that is just a terrible matchup for USC. I mean, Auburn's a bad matchup for a lot of teams. They're a horrific matchup for USC. And what I can't figure out is how Auburn lost as many games this season as it has. I mean, I've seen them play a couple of times against the Gamecocks, and you watch them play, and you think, good grief, this is a Final Four national championship caliber team. Give you an example of the two matchups this season. South Carolina's made 34 field goals against Auburn's defense. Auburn had 34 field goals alone today.
Mm.
I mean, it's just remarkable how exceptional they are against USC, whether it be offensive execution or defense. I mean, everything is contested in the half court for South Carolina offensively against the Tigers. They get no good looks. And then Auburn hits you with two big runs in the first half today, and it's over. I mean, just like it was on the plains back in February. Game was over at halftime, and it was just to determine the final margin of victory was the only thing left in the balance. And again today, I mean, they're down 20 at halftime. You just knew they weren't coming back. I mean, they're in the game early, and then that 15-1 run in the first half pretty much put it away. And then another nice run late in the first half clearly put it away. And South Carolina goes into these dry spells where against a team like Auburn, you just can't do so. And unlike the first meeting, Michi Johnson just really struggled, had a horrible game today, and they're not going to win in the postseason. Today's an indication. They're not going to win in the postseason if they get just bad games from Michi Johnson. They won't be around long next week because they can't afford him to go 1 of 10 from the field and 1 of 3 from three-point range and get his only points on that one three-pointer. I mean, he was just bad today, and as a whole, they were bad today, as they were a month ago against Auburn. And I think part of it, you've got to give Auburn credit. They're a really good basketball team, and I think they're probably sitting there thinking, when they stepped on the floor today, Phil, they thought, we're playing Sunday because we're better than South Carolina, and now we don't have to worry about Tennessee because mm-hmm. Mississippi State took them out for us.
Yep.
And then we'll get a tired Mississippi State team tomorrow, and I think you can look at Auburn and probably Kentucky in the final on Sunday.
I think Auburn, when they look at matching up with South Carolina, they're not worried about the Gamecocks inside game. You know, the Gamecocks have to play at a certain pace. Saw a great tweet from our former intern, Brian Ralph, who noted, of course, he's a basketball analyst. He noted, he said, South Carolina in games with more than 68 possessions, they're 3-4. I consider they only lost 7 games this season so far.
Mm-hmm.
They're 3-4 with a minus 37 scoring differential. In games with less than 68 possessions, 23-3. And a scoring differential of plus 204. So when the pace gets away, when the pace gets too quick, when they can't dribble, 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 pass, 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 go inside, inside, score, then they're lost with this particular makeup of this team. And they weren't able to do that today. Even when they got it inside, they couldn't make a shot. They couldn't navigate the length of Auburn inside. They had their worst shooting day of the season. Gamecocks finished at 28%. That's a low mark for them this season. They finished with 16 field goals. That's a low mark on the season. Heck, it wouldn't have been that good, but they made five of their last seven in cleanup time. So otherwise, it would have been a heck of a lot worse looking. They were turned over 10 times to five. Auburn turned those 10 turnovers into 17 points. The Gamecocks had two. Auburn won on the boards by only two, but during the crunch time, it was a lot worse than that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And inside, they scored 42 of their 86 points in the paint. A lot of that coming during those runs that you talked about when they put the game on ice. So not a good matchup for South Carolina, and they did not rise to the occasion of the matchup and play quality basketball. On top of that, Talon Cooper suffered an ankle injury in the second half. He was still with the team. He was on the sideline. They were treating him. He was walking around, and he ended up playing just 22 minutes. And I believe once he subbed out at the 11:02 mark, he did not come back in. So that'll be something of a little bit of a concern for them. You know, want to be healthy going into postseason play, NCAA tournament postseason mm-hmm. play next week. I mean, like Clemson, you know, the Tigers had a clunker in their ACC tournament loss to Boston College, but they knew they were in the NCAA tournament. Same with South Carolina. The Gamecocks had a clunker here today, but they know they're in the NCAA tournament. They were on the five line, and they were the number two team on the five line by Joe Lunardi this afternoon. This might knock them off the five line. It will certainly help Auburn probably make them somewhere in a top four seed, most definitely. And maybe they will rise even higher as the tournament plays on. You mentioned Mississippi State just took it to Tennessee today as well. Yeah, they came out of the gates swinging, and they knocked Tennessee out in the first half and did not let them back in. 73-56 was that final score. So, you know, happens to the best of them sometimes. The game gets away from you in basketball and you get taken for a ride. And that was the case there in that game and this game today for South Carolina. Coming up, it's going to get a little loud in here because the Kentucky fans have been waiting 3 days to be able to yell at their team. So they will be playing Texas A&M, tipping off a little bit after 7. And then we wrap it up tonight with Florida against Alabama. And we already got Mississippi State and Auburn set in one semifinal tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So that's what we've got here. We'll update other basketball for you. We'll hear from the Gamecocks once they wrap things up and get you that postgame audio from them. Also tonight, Jeff Owens will join us as we talk NASCAR. We got Bristol Racing. Always love Bristol Racing in the spring. We got that this weekend. George Bryan will have the golf segment at 7:35, birdies, bogeys, and biceps. And we'll have Matt Ward with us from the Tournament Players Championship down in Ponte Vedra, Florida. And we'll update what's happening with that here coming up in just a little bit. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery, lucky number for you to reach us here tonight on Sports Talk. Josh Cohen is back at our studios in Columbia. We got baseball as well, of course. We got ACC, SEC games now getting underway. Clemson playing at Duke and South Carolina playing at Ole Miss tonight. Keep you up to date on those games as well. Chris, anything else on your mind tonight before we move forward?
Probably the only other thing we should mention, and we talked about it yesterday, and you hit it on the head, at least touched on it in the open, is the contract extension for Lamont Paris was approved this morning by the Board of Trustees. So he is locked in until the 2029-2030 season. And his salary is bumped up considerably. Starts right around $4 million and eventually will get up near $5 million. But his buyout is fascinating. Ray Tanner has learned his lesson. He is not going to let Lamont Paris go away without a fight. If anybody comes calling in the next year or so, they're going to have to pay handsomely to get Lamont Paris out of South Carolina.
Yeah, the buyout beginning today, which is, of course, the Ides of March. We all remember the Ides of March, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beware the Ides of March.
Gamecocks did not today.
No. From today through March 31 of 2025, his buyout will be $12,500,000. 12 and a half. 12.5. The next year it drops to 10 mil. The next year to 7.5. Next year to 4. Next year to 3. Next year to 1. Of course, you hope things are going well enough for the Gamecock men's basketball team that you redo this contract in a year or two. He makes more money, you increase the buyout, and you have another contract. You know how this works. That's why they write these things in pencil and not ink, because they have to change them all the time. So Gamecocks took it on the noggin today, no question about it. And, you know, maybe you see some things when you play a team like Auburn, Chris, and you lose to them twice the way they did. Maybe you see some teams in your team that you know you've got to go and improve on to be able to get to that level. Now, you might say, well, look, they beat Kentucky in the regular season. Mm-hmm. They beat Tennessee once in the regular season. They beat Florida in the regular season, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they got some wins over some classy programs. Is Auburn a cut above those other teams? Are they, again, is it just a bad matchup for the Gamecocks?
I think it's the latter, Phil. I really do. I just, for whatever reason, Auburn has the things that South Carolina is deficient in, Auburn's very good in terms of getting out and guarding the shooters. And South Carolina is usually a very good defensive team, which is head-scratching that they've given up 101 points and 86 points to these guys the two times they have met them this year, and they shot 50-plus percent. Heck, in the first meeting, they shot, what was it, about 85% from the field. They hardly missed. And today, pretty much the same, especially in the first half when the game was in the balance. They were so good offensively, shot 49% in the first half and then 50 in the second half. I mean, they're just efficient against South Carolina, and the Gamecocks can't match up with them. Bench depth, I think, is one thing where they have a major advantage. You touched on this yesterday. You talked about South Carolina not being all that deep. And normally in tournament play, that's not a big deal because you get the extended timeouts. TV takes up a lot of time with commercials, so you don't have to worry about your starters getting that tired during the ball game. You're only going to go about 8 or 9 deep, but Auburn can go about 10 or 11 deep, and I think that's what separates them from the Gamecocks right now. I mean, they outscored South Carolina's bench 41-16 today. If you want to look at a major difference between the two, there's one right there.
Well, before they put the bench boys in with about 4 minutes to go, every player who'd been in the game for Auburn had scored at least 3 points. That was about maybe 10 or 11 guys had scored at least 3 points. Then they put the bench guys in, and four of those did not score. So, yeah, scoring up and down the line. Again, Jelani
Broom.
11
players score.
Yeah, Jelani Broom was once again fantastic. 18 points, 10 rebounds. You know, he hurt him badly at Auburn, did so again today. Auburn ends up shooting a 9 of 19 from 3. The Gamecocks end up shooting for the game 3 of 12 from 3. In the second half, they were 9 of 29 from the floor. But, again, they made 5 of those in the last couple of minutes when the game was well out of hand. So they just could not make buckets today. And they missed buckets inside. They had some opportunities inside, could not cash those in. The one place they did kind of excel was the foul line. They went to the foul line 28 times, and they made 20 of those. Auburn actually committed more fouls, 21-16. But the game was so one-sided, the foul shooting did not matter. So Gamecocks go down today at the hands of Auburn, 86-55. 888-898-2525. Let's go to Gamecock Larry. Get it rolling tonight here on Sports Talk. Gamecock Larry, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I wanted my men to come on back home, rest up, get ready for the NCAAs. And, Mr. Field, did you get me that blind date with Kim Mulkey. If you haven't, I would like to have Bruce Pearl as an escort with me and Kim, Miss Kim.
Well, now, be careful. Be careful. Hey, be careful. Bruce might snake you and steal Kim from you. You know, be careful.
Let me tell you something. I ain't complaining. The boy, the gentleman, Gamecocks, played the best they could play. And our day is coming. We're going to the NCAA. I don't care where they put us. But we going to be, I'll say, at least, I think we might go to the 16, Sweet 16. And then we'll talk about it after that. Sweet 16, nothing. Now, can you do me a favor, Mr. Phil? I know you're Clemson man. I know you're a Clemson man.
Yep.
But could you please tell me what station the Gamecock baseball team is going to be on at 7 o'clock? What station? If you could tell me, please, I'll hang up.
More than happy to assist you, Larry, because we don't care that you might want to listen to them and us. You can keep us on and also listen to Gamecock baseball. In Columbia, they'll be on 107.5, the Gamecock station in Columbia. So you can flip over there after you're finished with us. I would not expect you to do it 1 second sooner. Is that first pitch tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern or 8 o'clock Eastern?
I think it's 7:30, actually.
Okay.
Mr. Phil, you all have a good weekend.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Go Gamecock.
Thank you. Let's see here. Friday, March. Yeah, 7:30. 7:30 Eastern, Larry. You got plenty of time to have dinner, stare at the pictures of Kim Mulkey, and then turn on the baseball. Yeah.
Boy, Auburn has taken a little muster out of Larry, because you remember what a week ago he was talking about the Gamecocks winning national championships in both men's and women's basketball. Now he's just thinking, we might get to the Sweet 16, and then we'll talk after that.
You know,
that loss today stung him.
Yeah, after watching this game, too, you know, kind of reinforces my belief that the Gamecocks could win a game because they'll be the higher seed to begin the tournament. But I can't see them just, again, depends on matchup, so I don't really know. I'm talking blindly here. They'll have to play a lot better against no matter who they face. But, you know, that second-round matchup, could be a very difficult one, and trying to get to the second weekend might be a bit of a stretch for this team. I mean, we'll see. Teams can catch fire and run through the tournament before you know it. So all you got to do is win six games, as we well know. Let's go to Hank in Columbia next with us right here on Sports Talk from Nashville. Welcome in, Hank. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Corn. You know, Corn, I think you kind of, you're a little hot and cold with them. Auburn is just a bad matchup for South Carolina. And the reason that, if you remember, Auburn in the games that they win for a long time, they had the highest margin of victory because they have those 12 or 13 players that can play. They don't have a superstar. They just have, like the announcer was saying, they just have 12 really, really good players that can play. And so, if they get you into a running game, they run you ragged. I think they're just a bad match for South Carolina. I think, I think Lenardi had said this morning that regardless of what happened today, that South Carolina would be a 5 because yesterday kind of locked them into it. Now, they may go to a 6, as you say, or jump to a 7-9 or whatever you want to say. But he just felt that way, that they were just playing with house money today. But I think with Auburn, I think it's a thing where they are the matchup problem. Like, they can play a team that has the ability and athleticism of Auburn if that team is only going 6 or 7 deep, because then you have to kind of deal with the defense and when guys get tired. But Auburn kind of reminds you of our women's team without the consistency. Our women's team, a lot of teams slug it out, but they all, even the ones that play as close, just tell you, their players are physically exhausted by the third quarter. And for most of the girls that play us, normally by the second quarter, at the end of the second quarter, they're physically exhausted. And Don just keeps on running in players at the same level, and you just can't sustain it. And so Auburn, whenever you get them, whenever they get you running, I think that's why them and Kentucky are such a strange matchup, because Kentucky likes to run like they run. and Kentucky has those superior athletes. So if they're running, they have to run from behind. Auburn, they get themselves in the hole when they play them. But they're just a bad matchup for us. But I still think the team will make it to the second weekend because they're not any teams that have the depth of Auburn. I think all the announcers have said that mostly this year. And I think that some teams, we're going to be a strange matchup for some teams. A lot of teams are not going to want to see us in the tournament either, not the first weekend or two. I think I don't think we'll get past the 3-16. And if they do, I'll be happy. But I just think that we're going to be a strange matchup for some teams that are just not used to that style also.
It's all about matchups. You think the Gamecocks can get to the second weekend?
Oh, yeah, because I think they can win their first game. And then with some of the bracketology, they've had them paired up with Kansas in one or in a second-round game or Duke in one in a second-round game. And if you look at their teams this year, Kansas is just injury riddled, so they're not deep. And they don't, if they're in a tough game, they kind of seem to kind of go away like they did in the first round of that Big 12 tournament the other day.
Well, and thanks
so
very much.
It's about matchups.
Yeah, I know. It's all about matchups. I get that. Thank you very much. Again, time will tell. We've got to see who they end up playing, who they would face in the second round if they're fortunate enough to get past the first round, Chris. Looking at this South Carolina team, of course, you flash back to the Final Four team. And, that Final Four team, they had really four guys that you could count on to step up and make plays throughout a game. Of course, starting with Zendarius Thornwell. And then you had you had Zendarius Thornwell. Of course, you had Chris Silva coming
PJ.
On. You had
P.J. Dozier.
Yeah, P.J. Dozier. Yeah, Dozier. You had, of course, Mackey coming off the bench, giving you time. And you had – was that Dwayne Notice? Yeah.
Yes.
That Notice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to make sure I got the right era. Yeah, Dwayne Notice in there as well, hard nose. Watching this South Carolina team today, when things got tough on them, there was no one there to step up and pick it up for them. There was not that one, nobody hit a – like yesterday against Arkansas when they were kind of back and forth, they hit that shot. Mack hit that shot, that three-pointer, kind of turned the tide, and they took that momentum into halftime and kept it going in the second half. Nobody could do that today. Nobody could stop the bleeding for them and miss after miss after miss, and then Auburn would go down and score. So, I don't know. We'll see. Anytime you watch a performance like that, you have doubts about the team. No question about
it.
That's human nature. You're influenced. Look, it's a game-by-game proposition. Just like, with Clemson right now, you have to be worried about the Tigers after what you just saw from them. But they might come out, wherever they end up, in a good matchup and blows the doors off somebody in the opening round.
And I think the one thing to take away from today, too, Phil, is how healthy is this team? Miles Studi didn't suit up today, dealing with a hip pointer. Got to get him healthy and ready to go. And what's the condition with DeLon Cooper? It looked fairly mild. I mean, he hobbled off the floor. There was no reason to put him back in the game, so you don't get a gauge as to how serious the injury is. Maybe Coach will talk about it in the postgame. But if he's not healthy to go in the first round of the tournament, that's a major loss for them. He's sort of the rudder of that basketball team. They need DeLon Cooper, and they need a healthy DeLon Cooper, and they also need a healthy Miles Studi. That'd be a big help for them as well. They didn't have him today. Not that he would have made a 30-point difference, but still, you need all those guys who you've had pretty much for the majority of the season. You need all those guys firing on all cylinders heading into the postseason.
Gosh, you know what? I didn't even notice Studi not being in the ballgame today, but you're right.
Yeah, he was in street clothes.
Yeah, I couldn't.
On the bench
I'm sitting up here at the very top of the arena. We don't get any notes or anything like that, and I didn't see anything about it and didn't even notice. So not that he would have made any difference today
in a game like this. Today. Well, we actually probably get a better view watching it on television here in South Carolina than you did in the arena in the hockey press box in Nashville.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But I love sitting up in the hockey press box because it's just me and the Nashville Police Department. There was a whole row full of officers sitting up here.
Nice.
Even convinced John Whittle of the Big Spur wanted to sit up in the hockey press box. So he followed me up here this
Very
afternoon.
Cool.
And he probably won't sit up here again because the way the game turned out. All right, we got to hit the break, bottom of the hour, and we'll be back. Clemson is down at Duke, 3-1. Back in a moment. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Talk Media Network. Phil Kornblut in Nashville. SEC basketball tournament wrapped up for the Gamecocks this afternoon with that loss to Auburn. Tigers take it to the Gamecocks big, 86-55, proving to their point that the 40-point win at Auburn on Valentine's Day was no fluke in their minds. Lamont Paris had kind of stated that, yeah, They whipped him pretty good that night, but in his opinion, that was more of an anomaly than the true Gamecock basketball team. I don't know if any of that got back to Auburn, and they're like, okay, let's just show them again. And they went out and showed them again. No anomaly this time. I think you have to be convinced that, you know, Auburn's just that much better than South Carolina, winning at home and on a neutral court with ease, Chris, a game that was tucked away by the Tigers both times by halftime.
Oh, I agree. Auburn is clearly better than the Gamecocks, and it's a team you don't want to see again this season. You need to worry about them next year because, as Hank pointed out, and we touched on it at the outset of the show, it's just a bad matchup for USC. Gamecocks have good matchups. You know, you look at teams they've played this year, and you ran through the litany of wins they have. Is Tennessee considerably worse than Auburn? Tennessee won the SEC regular season title. They looked worse than Auburn today when they played Mississippi State, who just got after them defensively. That was more impressive to me. Auburn played what Auburn does. I thought their win this afternoon was very solid, and they looked good. But the one that shocked me was Mississippi State, how good they looked defensively against Tennessee. But that's a Tennessee team that South Carolina beat in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, matchups are everything in basketball, probably more so than any other sport. Matchups, you know, that old saying about horses for courses. Well, Auburn has the right horse for the South Carolina course for sure.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about which is kind of puzzling is the ability of South Carolina in those two Tennessee games, both there where they won and at home where they lost in a close one, to set the tempo in that mm-hmm. game. Yep. You know, both times the Gamecocks kept that at a pace that was comfortable for them. They made shots. Here's the other thing, too. Again, when you don't turn a team over, you're not going to get anything in transition. And so the Gamecocks did not do that today. They created no turnovers. I think they had five. They got nothing in transition, so no fast break points, no breakaway layups. Nothing like that. Everything was hard for them today. Their half-court offense was fairly stagnant. The ball didn't really move like it does. But, again, a lot of times when you're making shots, it looks like that ball's moving heck of a lot more than it is. And they just weren't making shots today. I went over the numbers, and the shots just weren't falling for them. So it was that kind of day for the Gamecocks here in Nashville. And they'll return home. They've got a little gathering on Sunday afternoon to watch the selection process. I don't know where they will wind up, if they're going to wind up out in the West, maybe in the Midwest. You know, great to have somebody a little bit closer to home, South Carolina, Clemson, or the College of Charleston. We know we're going to have we're going to have three teams mm-hmm. in the tournament, so it'd be nice to have at least one of them within reasonable driving distance. Hopefully nobody's going to be sent out to Washington. I mean, you ever been out to Spokane, Washington? Is it hard to get to Spokane, Washington? You're flying to Seattle? How do you get there?
I have been to Washington a couple of times flying up to Alaska. And then I have been to, what is the town where Washington State is? It's right across the border from Idaho, Coastal Plain, Idaho, a couple of years ago.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we should know that. That's Washington State is in Pullman.
Pullman, yes.
Yeah.
Pullman is right on the border with Washington and Idaho and Coastal, several years ago in football, played Idaho in Moscow, Idaho. So we drove into Pullman just to go see Washington State. So those are my three experiences in the state of Washington. I've spent probably less than 6 hours in the state. I've never been to Spokane, been to Seattle a couple of times, and then Pullman. But, yeah, it's not an easy trick to get up there. That's a long, long flight. But the problem is several of the pundits that I've seen you know, Smitty gets us an update every morning, and every time it seems like one of those teams, most notably the Gamecocks, for whatever reason, they appear to be headed to Spokane for whatever. I don't know why.
But well, somebody's got to go.
Somebody's going to be set up there, and it might be, you know, might be the Gamecocks.
Somebody has got to go. You want to go? Would you like to go this time? More than happy to work it out for you.
You know, I've been on the West Coast twice this year. That was enough.
Yeah,
I'll go cover the Gamecock women. They're playing in Columbia, right?
Well, you know what? You might draw that assignment, my man. Be careful. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for.
I don't have to fly there.
Let me update some baseball. Clemson down 3-1 to Duke, playing in Durham. The Tigers had the early 1-0 lead in this one, and Duke has come back to score three in the bottom of the first. Right, an RBI single for Clemson. Bravo. How about this name? Bravo. Bravo. Homers. Three-run homer to center for Duke to give the Dukies a 3-1 lead. Gordon started for the Tigers, still on the mound. Two innings so far, three hits, three earned runs. He's walked two. He struck out three. So kind of a shaky start for him. Charleston beat Wofford today 4-0. Playing that game at Patriots Point, a three-hitter by the Cougar staff. Cougars had nine hits. They win it 4-0, and the win goes to Brink. Goes eight innings, three hits, struck out four, walked two, improves to 3-0. So Wofford and Charleston playing this weekend. Charleston wins it 4-0. Coastal and James Madison underway. And it's scoreless. Well, not underway. I think they're going to be underway shortly.
They are. They're actually going to the bottom of the first.
Okay. They are underway.
Game, so they just got started. Yep.
It is scoreless. Okay. Very good. Very good. Let's go to Andy in Columbia. Next phone call here on Sports Talk. Andy, welcome in. Good to have you with us. How are you?
Good evening, fellas. Well, I'm glad to Coach Tanner and the BOT listened to kind of what I suggested the other night regarding Coach Parrish's extension. There, I lose you.
No,
which part was that?
Got you.
No,
okay.
Just wondering, I thought you were going to follow up and tell us which part.
You know, the part of the big buyout to get out so that he doesn't leave right away, the $12,500,000 isn't a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Remember I said they should start him at four, but they kind of went a little bit less, but he's ending at five. So, you know, it's a nice increment as it goes. And I think the duration of the contract is a very good duration for him. And I just think that was something good. Unfortunately, today wasn't followed up with a very good performance from our team. The one thing that has me worried that we've been seeing in the past few games is the three-point shooting from this team has not been what it was before. It's kind of seems to be very much more inconsistent. And I think the reason that we lost the Tennessee game was that in the first half we were throwing up so many threes and not going to the inside game that we were able to, was much more established in the second half. I think if we would have started that way in the first half and went through the second half that way, we probably would have beat Tennessee, but, you know, probably two, you know, would have, should have, and could have. But the big thing I think of this whole regular season year was the two losses that we should never have had to LSU and Georgia, and we wouldn't have been in this position today at playing Auburn. We would have been the number two seed in the tournament. And it would have played out better for us in the long run. But, you know, what this team has accomplished this year, there's no one who's a fan or is anyone who is knowledgeable about college basketball can say that this hasn't been anything but a great year, no matter what happens in the tournament, that this team has far exceeded any expectations that anybody has had from the University of South Carolina Gamecock men's basketball team. And I have to say, and I've said this to the captain, I can't be more proud of this team than I've ever been. And I was one person, as you know, when they got rid of Coach Martin, I wasn't that thrilled that they got rid of Coach Martin to start with. And Coach Paris wasn't someone who I was completely sold on. But at this point in time, I think that was the best hire. And I think Coach Tanner made a fantastic hire in bringing Coach Paris into our fold.
Yeah, I think all the signs point in a positive direction. You know, today you just wipe the slate clean, forget about that. You hope that anytime you sign a coach early in his career, coming off one good year, remember last year did not have a good year, had a really good year so far this year, you hope you're not overreacting by signing him to a long deal and big money and then things turn south on you. We've seen that happen, of course, before with other coaches. They've done a better job of protecting themselves this time, of course. But, you know, the indicators all point to Paris being a very solid guy, who can X and O with you, has an idea of the kind of basketball he wants to play, and can go get those players. So, all that being true, they might have their guy here for the long run and a bright future in men's basketball.
It you know, seems it's interesting. Like they have a pretty. I'm sorry, Chris.
No, go ahead, Andy.
It seems like they still have a pretty good core coming back from this year. Just going to be here next year. I think Gray is coming back, correct? He's every year he seems to be, you know, improving his game. And is Studi coming back? And also Michi Johnson still have time to come back? Because none of them went through senior day, did they?
They all can come back. The only ones that are definitely gone, eligibility-wise, would be Mack and Cooper.
Yeah, so, I mean, they have a chance to bring back a pretty solid core. And I know he had a pretty good, you know, so far the recruiting that they've brought in or have signed already seems to be a pretty good class. So, and no telling what he's going to get through the transfer portal.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that's the big unknown. And thank you, Andy. We got to run to a break because we want to hear from the Gamecocks coming up after this break. We're going to hear from the Gamecocks. But, yeah, the transfer portal, that's the great unknown. You know, what can you do to go out there and improve your team in the areas where you see the perceived weakness? I think a dead-eye shooter, another dead-eye shooter for the Gamecocks would be a good pickup for them if they can find one. Maybe this kid from Furman, the Foster kid who just entered the portal, averaged about 14.7 rebounds a game. Somebody like that, you know, might be somebody they would look at. We'll hear from the Gamecocks because they just finished up. We'll hear from them after the break.
George Bryan for Tsunami Bar Sports, our inventor, David Abernathy, has always said Tsunami Bar technology allows us to take the training to the grass. Now I know through my sport of golf that natural agility can be converted to athletic ability. And why is this, Tsunami Robbie?
Transferring the training to the grass. This may be the most undervalued characteristic of the Tsunami flexible bar technology. The Tsunami bar action loads and unloads at the concentric and eccentric transition points. This is what we call reversal forces, and the Tsunami bar is the only bar and training device that I know of that can train these reversal forces adequately at speed.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Stay tuned. More Sports Talk is coming up on the Sports Talk Media Network.
I'm attorney Jim Corbett. That's the sound of a big hit on you and your car or truck. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years, helping people who get injured in car wrecks and truck wrecks. If you have serious injuries, call Jim Corbett, 803-765-2968, or email me at jim@jimcorbettattorney.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T. I don't get paid unless I recover for you. Jim Corbett Attorney, for your best recovery from a big hit, 803-765-2968, or jim@jimcorbettattorney.com.
Last throw, big guy.
Come on, baby. I need me a giant bear.
I got this. I'm the target.
Ben, throw.
Yes! Oh, well, look who won a giant bear.
That's a grizzly.
Oh, mama's baby bear.
When you join the South Carolina Education Lottery's Players Club, you get way more than you expect. More chances, more wins, and more surprises.
Yeah, he's had all his shots. Just don't look him in the eye.
Join the Players Club at seeducationlottery.com because more happens here.
All right, the Gamecocks have wrapped up their post game. And here is Lamont Paris. He gave a brief opening comment about, you know, trouble matching up with Auburn, difficult matchup for them, etc. Pick it up with questions from the media for Lamont Paris just a few moments ago, Gamecock post game after their loss to Auburn.
Lamont, you know, I guess a lot in the aftermath, the words were bad matchup. What makes them such a bad, tough matchup for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. I would have to say, just based on our personnel, because they're suited to take away some of the things that, and there aren't that many teams that have been able to do that, but they're suited to take away some of the things that we like, that make us comfortable. I think it's a combination of they're very aggressive defensively, and then they're athletic and long. And they're not afraid to be physical and bump, you know. And so it was a physical game. And this is not an indictment on the officiating at all. I even told those guys at the end of the game. But if our matchup versus them is officiated that way, that's not the way we would prefer the game to be officiated with them, because they are so good laterally that they can press up and pressure you. And then most of the things that you do to alleviate that pressure are made more difficult because it's hard to rip drive them. You rip drive them and they're not afraid to body bump you. And, you know, they're not sometimes games are called in a way where those are fouls. You know, we've played in a game where there were 64 free throws shot in one game. Other games, they're not called. And so today was one of those days where they were letting that stuff go. And then to try to get your guys to say, okay, this is how the game's being played, we're going to body bump a little bit more. Well, that's not really what our guys do that much, so it's hard for them to make that adjustment. But I think that was one of the biggest things on the offensive end for us. And then oftentimes that carries over into what you're doing defensively. It just does for guys at this age. And so it was hard for us to persevere.
Other questions? Let's go to the middle of the second row right here.
Coach, I thought you guys were getting back in the game. It was 35-25, and then Chaney Johnson went on a little 5-0 run, and then they got another stop. Denver Jones caused a turnover, and then it just turned into a quick 9-0 run. Was that the key sequence and where the game just sort of got away?
That was the last opportunity for us in the minds of the players. That was the last opportunity, I'm sure, that they really said, okay, we're really going to do this now. We're really going to make our move and win the game. Probably in their minds beyond that, it was hoping that you would do enough things that you could get back into the game. So I thought that was a pivotal stretch for them, particularly that it was they answered the move that we made to get it to 10. Again, I referenced that possession. It was 10. We had a good look at a 2-point basket that could have cut it to 8, and then who knows after that. But instead, they went on a run there, and then that had an impact, a big impact on, I think, where the mindset of guys were the rest of the game.
Question on the right, second row.
Alan Cole, GamecockScoop.com. You've been through this Wisconsin, Chattanooga now. You're about to have more time off than you get pretty much at any point during the season. What does a week between a conference tournament and NCAA tournament look like for these guys?
Yeah, well, I think, one, resting up. You know, we'd like to play as many games in this conference tournament as possible. We'd like to win this conference tournament. But the silver lining in it is that we got a couple guys banged up. Miles Studi, as you noticed today, was not dressed up. And so that's more time for guys like him. Talon looked like he was banged up a little bit today, and so I didn't have him back in it towards the end of the game. And so I think what it does is give guys some time to rest up and heal up and get treatment and recover. I think that's a big part of it. And so if not for winning at all, I guess this is probably is, you know, some people would probably prefer this rather than play another game and still not win at all. Now, some seeding things may go into that in terms of the NCAA tournament, but I just think it'll be a good time for us to get back and try to get off of our feet, rest, and then do a lot of recovery.
Okay, let's go to the center, second row. Then I get you.
You guys have only played in like seven games where you haven't got 68 offensive possessions or more and dropped four of them. How do other teams dictate those things? And, you know, is that a big key of emphasis of like, okay, we need to play at our pace and that's how we're going to win games?
Yeah. I mean, part of it in this game was that we had a hard time manufacturing stops. And that's become a good thing for us is you're going to, if you look at pace is a little, it's a little bit of a misnomer if you don't know exactly what goes, all the components that go into pace, i.e., if you get an offensive rebound, that counts as the same possession. We're a pretty decent offensive rebounding team. But for us, I think our offense is generally started better on a miss, right? If we get a defensive stop, it allows us to make our first action happen with less resistance, typically, because some teams specifically, a lot of teams specifically try to make our first action difficult for us. And sometimes that's counterproductive because it makes us run even more offense on the possession. But we like to get stops for a lot of reasons, one of which is because it does trigger us into our initial action happens a little bit quicker, and we can get into some of the things that we like better on the offensive end. So because there were so many, we were getting so many, they were scoring so many baskets, we weren't getting stops, and then they were pressing some on the end of that, it got bogged down a little bit for us on the offensive end. And so, you know, that was a big part of what happened.
All right, center aisle, third row.
I asked you yesterday, you know, about playing that extra game. You said it only really hurts you if you lose it. But coming into this really tough physical matchup today, do you think your guys are a little bit tired?
Nah, not at all. I don't think so. I mean, I hope that that's not the case, that you play one game and then the next day you're so tired that you can't win. And really, in a largely non-competitive way towards the end of the game. Because that wouldn't bode well for most teams that are in this tournament, right, playing in the NCAA tournament. I think at some point the benefits really of moving on or of securing buys, whether it's the single buy or the double buy, is that the likelihood of you winning five games in a row is probably significantly less statistically than winning three games in a row. And so therein lies the benefit, I think, of getting a double bye. But I did believe that getting here with a single bye and seeing teams play, getting a feel for the atmosphere of the tournament, the environment, people running around, watching games, knowing that you had that extra day, and then coming out and playing, if you play in that game and you play well, I think it's a real benefit to you. I do. So I don't think playing a game had a whole lot of impact on what the outcome of this one was.
All right, comments from Lamont Paris, all of us up on our website, sportstalksc.com. If you want to check it out, feel free to do so. Wow, tell you what, man, I love Kentucky basketball fans, Chris, because they love their team. They love their team no matter what. Now, they're spoiled as heck.
Oh, sure.
They're used to winning championships, and they expect to win a championship every tournament, but they are going to pack this arena tonight. As I look around, they're about to play Texas A&M. It's almost all blue. Now, the seats are blue, but the jerseys, the shirts, the sweaters, everything's going to be pretty much blue in here, 20-something thousand plus by the time this thing tips off between Texas A&M and Kentucky in about 2.5 minutes. They do love their Kentucky basketball. We'll follow them anywhere. Some of them have bought seats up here in the ice hockey press box section, to be honest with you. Be back after the break.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Okay, we're back on Sports Talk here on the Sports Talk Media Network. Having to out-shout 20,000 Kentucky fans. I bet you by the end of the night, they'll be about 20,000. Because you know what they were doing? Those who didn't have tickets, they're waiting outside. Mm-hmm. They bought up all the Tennessee tickets. Tennessee fans more than happy to sell those tickets to anybody who'll take them off their hands after they were beaten today by Mississippi State. And so Kentucky fans streaming in here. Yeah, they're pretty much packing the place. You know, they're like, I would imagine you compare them to North Carolina fans, maybe more than Duke.
Sure.
Because there's more alums, of course, they're bigger schools. North Carolina fans are pretty much the same. Maybe Kansas fans are the same. I imagine Kansas fans travel extremely well. What about, I don't know, anybody else you'd put in this category?
No. Well, I think you, in years past, you could probably put teams like Louisville and Memphis. I remember years and years and years ago, this will date us all, but back when South Carolina was in the Metro, and one season, Carolina actually hosted the Metro men's basketball tournament. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Memphis and Louisville in the finals. And that place was packed.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, I mean, Louisville was what we now, you know, used to know Louisville basketball was. And that was when Elliott Perry and those guys were playing Memphis, and they were really good. So, yeah, those teams, tradition-rich programs usually travel. And the one thing, they also have an advantage. Kentucky may not have technically fans that came from Lexington, but I guarantee they've got a ton of fans who live in Nashville. Same thing with North Carolina. If the ACC tournament were in Nashville, when North Carolina shows up to play, they would have a bunch of fans who live in Tennessee but pull for the Tar Heels.
Yeah. Yeah, they're everywhere. And, you know, the ride from the state of Kentucky to Nashville is not all that
right.
Not all that much, you know. So it's something you can do without having to stress yourself. But they plan on this, as we've said before, you know, a lot of Kentucky fans who can't get season tickets to Rupp Arena, they buy the tickets when the Cats go on the road, or they buy their mm-hmm. tickets here, and they come watch them here when they can. So, okay, let's update some things. Clemson baseball, Tigers are down 4-2 now, top of the fourth at Duke. Tigers just scored a run in the fourth, right homer to center field. He singled in the first, so he's got both Tiger runs. Bravo homered to right center for three runs for Duke, and then he homered to left for the other run for Duke. So two guys have accounted for all the runs in that game, 4-2. Duke leading the Tigers. Gordon remains on the bump for the Tigers. Three innings, six hits, four earned runs, four strikeouts, and three walks thus far. College of Charleston beat Wofford 4-0. Top of the third, Coastal Carolina, James Madison. They are scoreless, and South Carolina and Ole Miss will get underway a little bit after 7:30 tonight. Some other basketball. Pittsburgh and North Carolina just underway, the ACC tournament semifinals. And we've got Florida, Alabama to come here tonight, and NC State, Virginia still to be played there in D.C. at the ACC. Mississippi State beat Tennessee today, 53-66. UConn is leading St. John's 64-54. Second half of that Big East game taking place at Madison Square Garden. Illinois on top of Ohio State 25-18. They're in the first half. Houston just underway against Texas Tech 5-2 in that tournament game. And we've also got Purdue beat Michigan State 67-62. Does Michigan State get in? 19-14, 10-10. Do they get in? South Florida having a great year. Beat East Carolina 81-59. They're 24-6.
They'll be
Wisconsin.
In.
Oh, yeah. Wisconsin beat Northwestern 70-61. I think both of those are in. Well, Northwestern, Wisconsin's 21-12. Northwestern's 21-11. Won 12 Big Ten games. Wisconsin won 11.
How much of a bump does the Big Ten give all of its schools, as good a league as that is? Much like the Big 12. The Big 12 is probably going to get in a host of teams, partly because of how strong that league is. And I think the Big Ten probably will be able to carry a couple of teams in that may not be quality enough in other leagues, but because they'll get a Big Ten bump because of whom they play, I'm guessing their net rankings are probably pretty solid.
Yeah. Let's see, a couple of other notes, and then we'll do the recruiting report for you here on Sports Talk. A couple of other notes of interest here. And let's see here. Got to find them first, then I'll talk about them. NCAA issuing a blanket waiver for FBS and FCS teams to increase preseason and fall camp roster from 110 to 120. It's effective for this season. And as expected, college football playoff leaders finalized the agreement on a new $1.3 billion per year contract. This is according to Yahoo Sports earlier today. All nine conferences and Notre Dame signed on, committing to a new deal with ESPN starting in 26. A new rev model. What's rev? A new rev model and parameters on future format. A new revised model? Yeah, maybe a new revised
revenue.
Model.
Maybe
new revenue.
Revenue
model. Yeah, new revenue model. And this new model, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to get the biggest shares.
Yes.
And the ACC after that and on down. I wonder how, you know, and I guess their argument is, hey, we produce most of the Big Ten, the big teams, and we produce most of the TV viewership, and we should get most of the money. Wonder how that's going to sit with teams like Clemson, Florida State, et cetera, on down the line. You know, reaction.
I think
to
we
them
already know, don't
seen.
We? I think we well, already yeah. know how sitting with Florida State, they're trying to sue their way out of their own conference to get somewhere else so they can get a bigger piece of the pie.
But the Big Ten or the SEC's got to be willing to take them.
Very true.
If they're going to get a piece of that. Nate Oates in Alabama have agreed to a long-term contract extension that will make him one of the five highest-paid coaches in the country. All right. And Michigan fired their coach, Juwan Howard, today, the former star at Michigan who did a good job early on but tailed off the last 2 years. And so they are letting him go. All right, let's give you the recruiting report tonight here on Sports Talk. And our recruiting report on Sports Talk is brought to you by Seawells. Hope you got a chance to get to Seawells this week for the daily lunch and buffet and enjoy a great meal. If not, you've got all next week and the following weeks to do so. Make sure you put that on your agenda for lunch. Seawells daily lunch and buffet, 11 to 2. And with spring and summer, spring here, summer coming, you got the big special event. You want the very best from the catering side of things. You need to call Seawells. Let them take care of business for you. 803-771-7385 online at SeawellsCateringSC.com. First, women's basketball. USC is out of the running for the number one prospect in the 24 class. 6'10", Sarah Strong of Charlotte, in an ESPN story this morning, revealed that her final three choices are North Carolina, Connecticut, and Duke. She's the daughter of South Carolina natives Danny Strong and Allison Feaster. Furman wing 6'4", Marcus Foster, has put his name into the NCAA transfer portal, John, according to Rivals.com. This season, Foster averaged 17 points, 7.5 rebounds per game. Cornerback Shamari Earls of Chester, Virginia, has USC in his final 10. The others are Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Duke, Maryland, Michigan State, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Texas A&M. Defensive tackle Sterling Sanders of Blythewood attended the USC Junior Day January 20th. Is hopeful of landing an offer from the Gamecocks. He talked with defensive line coach Travion Robertson on his visit and was told they like his size and how he can run. Sanders said Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina have been showing him the strongest interest at this point. He plans to visit those two this spring, along with Georgia Tech, Charlotte, and Appalachian State. South Carolina defensive end Terrell Dawkins has put his name into the NCAA transfer portal, John, according to Rivals.com. Dawkins transferred to USC from NC State. Prior to the 2022 season, he played in 9 games in his 2 seasons with the Gamecocks and recorded 3 tackles. 2026 cornerback Dorian Barney of Sewanee, Georgia, was at Clemson last week, and he'll visit USC April the 4th. He's at Georgia Tech today, and his other visits coming up will be Georgia, Alabama, Florida State, Ohio State, and Colorado. USC offered 2027 defensive tackle Valdin Sone. And I'm making up the pronunciation. It could be Valdin Sone, but I like Valdin Sone. 6'4", 287 of Sweden. Sweden's got football players. He visited earlier in the week with some other guys from his school. He's been visiting schools, and he also picked up offers from Georgia, Florida, UCF, and LSU, and the group also made a stop at Clemson. USC also offered 2026 defensive end Jermaine Kinsler, 6'7", 260 of Oradell, New Jersey, 2026 offensive tackle Kale Ellis, and 2026 offensive tackle Bear McWhorter of Cartersville, Georgia. Also, USC target tight end Marshall Pritchett, offered by Arizona. Wide receiver Corey Sims, who has an offer from USC, has set an official visit to Missouri for June 21st. 2026 Zion Giles of Carver's Bay plans to visit USC next week. He was at Clemson last weekend. He was offered by Coastal Carolina on Tuesday. And Camden defensive back JoJo Krim visited Clemson this past Saturday. There you go with the recruiting report tonight here on Sports Talk. Make sure you check it out every day on our Twitter at Sports Talk SC and on the internet on our website at sportstalksc.com. Texas A&M with the 14-8 lead on Kentucky.
That is
at
remarkable.
The under-16 timeout.
Josh and I have been marveling at how loud the building is behind you in the background. And if you just listen to what's going on in the building, had no idea what the score was, you would think Kentucky's up by 20, judging by the crowd reaction. I can't believe they're behind, judging by what we're hearing from your end of the show tonight.
They go crazy anytime Kentucky blocks a shot, gets a basket. And I'm telling you, this arena is almost completely full, and it's almost all Kentucky fans if you go by the color of their shirts. Mm-hmm. Okay, time to talk some NASCAR. After the break, Jeff Owens will join us in the fast lane. We'll get the lowdown on things at Bristol, which, you know what? Bristol can be as loud as this place. You ever been to Bristol for a race?
Have not. Been told that's one thing that should be on the bucket list because of the noise alone.
I would agree. We'll hear from Jeff on that coming up.
Hi, this is Lisa Hostetler-Brown. If you or a loved one are over 65 and haven't completed a long-term care planning consultation, now is the time. Did you know that if you aren't able to afford the high cost of skilled care, your assets can be rapidly depleted to only $2,000 unless you plan 5 years in advance? Visit LawyerLisa.com to see how we can help.
7511 St. Andrews Road, Irmo, South Carolina.
Hi, this is Billy Downer from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Are you looking for a safe place to shoot your rifle or handgun? Did you know that the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources operates 4 manned ranges across the state in Pickens County, Spartanburg County, Richland County, and Charleston County? For more information on our public ranges, visit dnr.sc.gov/shooting.
You're listening to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. We're back in a moment.
You've put in the work for your education. The extra early, extra late, extra work. That's because you understand education opens doors to better pay, better opportunities, and a better you. Being educated about playing the lottery is no different. It helps you be a better player, one who knows when to play and when to take a rain check. The lottery's a game, so let's keep it fun. Learn more at sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
Last year was a big year for Founders Federal Credit Union and our amazing members. A total of $30 million was given back to qualifying members in the form of loyalty bonus dividends, proving once again that it pays to be a Founders member. Founders is also committed to pouring time and resources into the local communities we serve. If you aren't a member yet, what are you waiting for? Join Founders today. Visit foundersfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA. Membership qualification required.
Let's go racing, boys.
Come on, Kentucky fans, sing.
Come on, Kentucky fans, let us hear ya. As they trail 15-10, I'm actually not too far where I'm staying from Franklin, Tennessee. Actually met someone today who grew up in Franklin, Tennessee, which is the hometown of Darryl Waltrip. She happens to know Darryl Waltrip's sister. So I thought that was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. As we welcome Jeff Owens into the fast lane, once again, are you impressed by my name-dropping Franklin, Tennessee, Darryl Waltrip?
That's a pretty good one. I'm surprised you remember that.
Well, I have to, you know, there's a Franklin, Kentucky as well. Don't people sometimes get them confused with Franklin, Kentucky?
They do, and I think there's a Franklin, North Carolina as well, so they mix
there
up all three.
Yep.
So.
Well, it is Franklin, Tennessee, the hometown. That's where they – that's where he's claimed. So, welcome in to you, sir. Before we talk about Bristol, what'd you think about Phoenix last weekend, the race, the winner, how everything went down?
Yeah, you know, it was an okay race, I thought, Phil. Not great. I thought, once again, we saw that this car struggles a little bit on the shorter tracks. Some good racing on the restarts and back in the pack a little bit, but you know we saw the same problem we saw last year on the short tracks. You know, whoever got out front was going to check out, and it was going to be very difficult to run them down in clean air and to catch them. And that's sort of what happened in that race. Whoever got out front tended to dominate the race. And then it came down to a last pit stop. Christopher Bell got out front, and that was kind of all she rode. And, you know, good win for him. Interesting result. You know, he's been in the championship for the last couple of years at Phoenix and had some problems and couldn't get it done. But this time he shows up with the fastest car and wins his first race of the season. So that certainly bodes well for him, and especially if he can get back to that championship race again.
Yeah, and if I could get these Kentucky fans to hold it down just a little bit. Good Lord.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. But it gets Toyota on the board this season. You knew they would sooner or later. It gets Toyota on the board. And I tell you what, Toyota and Fords dominated the top 10 at Phoenix.
Yeah, they did. You know, and that was interesting. You know, we talked early in the season, in the preseason, how they both have new cars this year that they're trying to shake down and see how they're doing. They had both been really fast in qualifying and at times during the race, but we had seen Chevy win the first three races of the year and Toyota finally get to going. Now it's Ford's turn. We'll see if they can do it this weekend at Bristol, but I think what we're seeing is they're getting adjusted to this new car. I think Ford is too, and that should make things even more competitive, I think. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Owens in the fast lane with us here tonight on Sports Talk. They go to Bristol this weekend. We'll delve into that in just a couple of moments. Jeff, final thoughts on Phoenix. I read an interesting story about Toyota in particular, and obviously Christopher Bell's performance because he was so dominant. And the story, the gist of it was that they felt like they actually won that race back during the offseason with TRD going back into the wind tunnel and doing a lot of stuff with the new car and the new shape of the Camry and everything. They felt like Toyota, when they showed up, they were ready to go with this medium and short track package. You talked about how that might bode well for Christopher Bell, but does this portend maybe the Toyotas in particular being dominant in the short and medium tracks moving forward?
Yeah, we'll see. Chris, this weekend will be a big test at Bristol, but you know, the Toyotas are typically pretty good on those tracks anyway, and if this new car is as good as they think it is, I think that's going to play right into their hands. We've seen Denny Hamlin win a lot of short track races. Mm-hmm. Bell, we saw last week, was good there. Martin Truex Jr., they've been pretty good on those kind of tracks over the years, particularly Hamlin. You know, we've seen him dominate it at Martinsville and Richmond and different places, and Truex do the same thing. So, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, that's probably a good sign, especially on your flatter tracks. It'll be a little different this weekend at Bristol. But, yeah, I expect when we get to another place like Richmond, we'll see probably a similar performance that we saw last weekend at Phoenix.
Jeff, did Jimmy Johnson retire too soon? And the reason I say that, he was inducted, as I'm sure you well know, into the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America down at Daytona this week. And he actually said during that induction speech that he's still open to about a 15-race schedule there, when includes sports cars, vintage classic car racing, and NASCAR. Is this a guy who realized once he got out of the seats, he shouldn't have gotten out of the seat?
Well, yeah, I think that's what a lot of racers go through. It's very difficult for these guys to step away, and we've seen before a lot of them step away, and then they regret it, and they wish they could still go. I think back to Mark Martin. He retired and was out for a couple of years, and then a seat opened at a new team, and he came back, and he was competitive, and then he winds up at Hendrick Motorsports, and he won 5 or 6 races. So mm-hmm. I think drivers go through that. They still think they can get it done. I don't know if that's the case with Jimmy. He was certainly one of the greatest of all time. But we saw toward the end of his career, the last 3 years, you know, here's a guy that dominated the sport for the better part of a decade, and then all of a sudden he just fell off and just sort of couldn't get it done anymore for whatever reason. And that led to his retirement. So, you know, I don't know. It would depend on whether Jimmy could get back in a good car. He had the perfect combination when he was at Hendrick Motorsports, the perfect crew chief, the perfect equipment, the perfect team, and it all just came together for him. And that's what you have to have. And when you get older, you do lose a little bit of your edge, and it becomes a little more difficult to find that perfect equation. So we'll see. You know, I'm glad he's still around and still running. I think he's good for the sport, but whether he could get back to winning or not, I kind of doubt it at this stage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess he would also have to talk Chad Knaus into coming back too, wouldn't he?
That's right. That's the ingredient he was missing. And, that's been an age-old debate. You know, is it the driver? Is it the crew chief? We saw the same thing in the NFL. You know, is it Tom Brady? Is it Belichick? Well, the answer over the years has proven to be that it's both of them. You know, you lose one, you know, you're losing a huge ingredient there. And he and Jimmy were the perfect combination for many years. We saw it with Jeff Gordon. You know, he and Ray Evernham were dominant. And then Ray steps away and does something else, and all of a sudden Jeff's not quite as dominant. You know, still won races, but he wasn't the same guy. So you got to have that perfect combination to get it done. And, without that, I'd love to see Jimmy win again, but it's going to be tough for that to be in the cards, I think.
Jeff, we've got about 45 seconds, if you will. Give us a sneak preview as to what we should expect to see this weekend at Bristol. I know race fans always enjoy the short track, especially Bristol in particular, coming up with the race this weekend. What should we look forward to?
Yeah, going to be interesting because, they were running the dirt track there every year for about 3 years there. They've gone away from that. We're back to the concrete. This will be the first Bristol race they've run in the daytime on the concrete for about 3 years, and especially with this new car. So that'll be really interesting.
I expect your old guys who always were good at Bristol, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, those guys, I think those guys will probably rise back to the top.
Jeff, we appreciate it, my man. Great talking to you. Have a super weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. Jeff Owens in the fast lane. Texas A&M leading Kentucky. You wouldn't know it by the noise. 20-16 at the 12-under. Be back.
Four. Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been down to this day. But it went straight down the middle. Now that whistle.
All right, time for birdies and bogeys and biceps. And here in Nashville, block shots and basketball, yeah. Kentucky blue blood screaming their lungs out. But we're going to talk about the quiet, genteel game of golf where you got to be perfectly still. You can't breathe a sound when a golfer is about to take that backswing, about to make that putt. We welcome in another edition of Birdies, Bogeys, Biceps, George Bryan III. And we have special guest with us covering the TPC for us down in Jacksonville, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville, Florida, MJ Ward. And before I go to the guys, let me update the leaderboard. We got Wyndham Clark, a 65, got a four-shot lead at 14 under. Xander Schauffele, a 69. Nick Taylor, a 68. They are at 10 under. Matt Fitzpatrick, 69 at 9 under. Maverick McNealy is 68, 9 under. That's the top of your leaderboard. And then we've got as well Roy McIlroy, a 73. He's at minus 6. Matt Neesmith, a good day, a 67. He's at 4 under. Ben Martin, a 71. He's at minus 1. Lucas Glover, a 69. He's even. Justin Thomas, a 69, is... Make that Justin Thomas a 74. He's plus 1. Carson Young, a 75, plus 2. Jordan Spieth, a 72, plus 2. Andrew Novak, a 74, plus 4. We've got some college golf as well we'll touch on in just a moment. But, George, welcome to the tee. We got MJ standing by to tee it up with you. Take it away, my friend.
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring MJ. Let's get him to stick it in the ground with us. Welcome, MJ, from Jacksonville.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah, looks to me like you had great weather. The great outdoors is being kind to you all down there in Jax.
Well, I think, you know, when you have somebody like Wyndham Clark, today was really, really impressive. I mean, to shoot a 65 on day one, come back again with the same score, ties the tournament record of 130 that Greg Norman had when he won in 94. I didn't think that there would be anybody possible that could threaten 24 under, which is what Greg Norman has as the 72-hole record. And Wyndham Clark potentially has that possibility of doing that. It was impressive. I mean, he's only had two bogeys. He's made over 200 feet of putts, which is mind-boggling. He birdied four of the first five holes. This was really a tremendous performance over the first 36 holes. I mean, clearly he's the defending U.S. Open champion. There's still a lot of golf to go, as there always is at a place like Sawgrass, where anything is possible. But the first 36 holes, truly impressive stuff. Yeah, you can't minimize when a man shoots two rounds like that on this kind of golf course. It was there, and it was amazing what he has done so far. So it'll be interesting to see, now that he has the lead, how does he play? Does he continually keep doing what he's been doing?
Yeah, well, he's
he's proven that he definitely can keep the role going. And what he and Greg Norman and Phil Kornblut have in common is they all just drive the ball exceptionally well. I mean, he rips the center out of that
who
fairway.
Who was that third? Who was that
long.
Third guy you mentioned? Who was that third guy you mentioned?
Well, it's Greg Norman, Wyndham Clark, and Phil Kornblut. They all drive it a lot alike, really, really long and straight. And Phil, you know what I'm talking about. You can dismantle any course if you hit it really long and straight off the tee.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would love to be able to do that, George, but, you know, I'm resisting moving up to the senior tees. That's the last thing I'm fighting, you know. I'm going to hold out for as long as possible to still play the whites, though I've been encouraged to play the ladies. But I'm not going that far, but I'm holding out playing the white tees for as long as I can.
Yeah, well, that is interesting at TPC, when you start, and the ball, it seems the getting some roll, and I haven't watched this much TV golf this year. So this kind of starts the season in my mind and begins the promise for Augusta. But the conditions seem just about as docile as it can be for scoring there, MJ, is the TV's making it look kind of easy.
Well, I mean, you know, keep this in mind. I mean, when you don't have much wind and the ground isn't super firm and you get somebody who's, you know, on their game, and the thing that always separates all the elite players, I mean, there's one key word. It's the putter. You know, the hitting of the golf ball between the elite players, there really isn't that much of a difference. I mean, the distance can be a little bit different depending upon how strong a player is, but it's really all it comes down to is, can you make putts? And when you have a guy who's made over 200 feet of putts, which is remarkable if you did that over 72 holes, never mind do it over 36, it's just, you know, it's incredible. I mean, as I said before, I was there when Greg Norman shot 24 under. And, you know, I have always thought among the things that Greg Norman has done in a career that would be a record that would probably be never touched, because it's just remarkable when you consider the venue. But Wyndham Clark is within striking distance of that. It's not out of, you know, potential. I mean, don't get me wrong. If he even wins the event by shooting 16 under or 15 under, a win is a win. But it's really impressive to see what he has done. And I often think that he really flies under the radar, because much of the attention has always been on people like Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. And, you know, before he left for LIV, when John Rahm was on the PGA Tour. But he is definitely a major player. And it'll be interesting to see how he plays from this point forward, given what can happen at a place like this. I mean, you know, even though things can go well, this is the kind of golf course, I said it the other day, when Pete Dye created Sawgrass, he wanted to make sure that the top players were exposed to the kind of situations where you can have a train wreck. And there are potential train wrecks out there. When you're playing at the pace that Wyndham Clark is playing at, hard to imagine somebody can continue that pace. But, you know, when he's 14 under, and it's an amazing run that he's had so far. And it'll be interesting to see not only how he plays, but how the guys are who are behind him. I mean, a lot of things can happen with that.
How are things going at 17? I did see one hole in one yesterday. Are they dialing it in with the wind? Is the wind as calm there as it is everywhere else on the course? Is 17 causing any problems?
You know, Phil, I got to tell you, in all the years I have seen this hole, I mean, it boggles the mind how much that players feel the intensity of the audience that's around them. I mean, much has been made, you know, when we talk about par threes, you know, like the one in Scottsdale at the Waste Management at TPC where they have the crowds around. You know, when you have a green, which essentially is really large, and the guys are not hitting more than a wedge or a soft nine iron unless the wind really comes up. But it's amazing how Pete Dye just got into the heads of a lot of these players. I mean, for a pro at the elite level to find water, unless they're shooting for the pin, and you'll see the Sunday pin in its traditional place, which will be back right corner. If you miss that green, somehow or another, you just allow the atmosphere to overwhelm your senses. It's hard for me to imagine that many players could really miss a green with nothing more than a wedge or a nine iron in their hand. But that's what happens with pressure, and a lot of things can turn just because people feel it at that point in time in the round, and things can happen on that hole. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how players play it because, you know, you can't let Wyndham Clark just get by the third round and have a 5-6-shot lead on the golf course because then you're going to have to start making some moves. And it'll be interesting to see tomorrow how somebody like Scottie Scheffler, I mean, he's 6 shots off the pace, but it's very, very doable for a guy like him to dial it in and move up the leaderboard. So it's going to have to be a combination of how do the players react that are behind, and then how importantly does Clark keep going forward? Hard to say how that plays out on a place like, you know, Sawgrass.
Sure. George, before we continue, let me update a little college golf because the college golf season now is going to really tick up. We've got the Schenkel being played in Statesboro, Georgia, and South Carolina's in it, and Gamecocks are right now in ninth place after the first round. They shoot a 289 as plus one. They're 12 back of the leader, Middle Tennessee State. Nathan Franks leads the Gamecocks. He's tied for sixth, and he shoots a 3-under par score opening round. And then you've got the Florida State matchup down at Tallahassee. Coastal Carolina's playing there. And actually, it is – no, they've played two rounds. They've played two rounds. Coastal is plus 32. Not going well. Duke is your leader at 31 under. So a couple of collegiate events going on as we see the college golf season heat up. And these college guys, George, as you well know, they'll be the stars of tomorrow that MJ will be writing about as he covers the PGA and to some degree the LIV Tour.
And it is interesting, not in contention, but Oberg, they were talking about he was just playing college golf last season, and there's no question that the college programs are basically training grounds for tour players. And there's no question that our game needs young superstars, and that's kind of cool to see Wyndham Clark play well. And I'm looking at the leaderboard now. Xander Schauffele, he's kind of he'll be my favorite heading into the weekend, at least what I'm looking at. And McNeely, I guess he's a Stanford grad. MJ, you can back me up on that. And then, we're in the game star for some new talent. Also, the setting is perfect for it to take place. And LIV Tour, I'm glad to hear. I did not know, didn't realize you were covering the LIV Tour. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing between the two, MJ.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I really don't think the LIV Tour is really kind of separated into two kind of different parts. You have the guys who went over to LIV that were already in the seventh and eighth inning, to use a baseball metaphor, in their careers. I mean, there really wasn't going to be much high-level golf coming left from Phil Mickelson, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, Graham McDowell, Ian Poulter, players of that sort. And then you had some younger players, Cameron Smith, Joaquin Neiman, a few of those guys who are younger. They played on the LIV circuit. The thing I've said this for a very long time, without world ranking points, it's hard for me to envision that a young player will just jump to LIV unless the money is so ridiculously out of sight. But if you go to live, you basically are putting yourself in a box, because you're not going to be able to get world ranking points to play in the major championships. So, you know, I think Liv has some dynamic players. Clearly, Brooks Koepka is one of them. I mean, he's won 5 major championships. DJ is still, he could still say he's, you know, he's a factor when he plays, because he's still contemporary enough. But on the PGA Tour, on what is out there, and let me just mention to both you and Phil, I mean, I cover a lot of the Korn Ferry events, and the talent that is on the Korn Ferry is just amazing. And I think part of the thing that had to happen with the PGA Tour, they had to have a provision to get younger players faster into the mix so that they could play at the highest of levels. They couldn't have an exemption situation where you're holding aside 125 spots, and in many cases, half of the number of that 125 is only hanging on by their fingernails to remain exempt. You have to be more competitive by allowing more fluid players moving into the scene. And, you know, George, you just mentioned before about Ludwig as an example. There's a number of players that are just, you know, really ready to come on the scene. And it's just a question of whether or not they can get those opportunities. And if they do, I think you're going to see this next generation of players, when they are emerging, then you're going to see that happen. And it could happen as early as this year with this year's majors coming up.
No question. I think it's definitely the most intriguing period of time that we've had in golf. Tremendous opportunity. You mentioned the Korn Ferry Tour, and I agree. There are a lot of great players nobody's ever heard about, but they're just bubbling, ready to go. And it's wide. I like your term, too, circuit. I think that I've alluded to the Live, or I've mentioned this. I don't think there's anything wrong with having another tour, a little bit like the ice skaters at the Olympic level. You have when you're playing for the gold, and then you have your off-season money-making ice circuses. And I'm not familiar with what you call those competitions, but I know you got there for entertainment. And
yeah, I think the main thing with when you play golf, I think it always comes down to, and I think this has been said by Rory McIlroy and a few other players. I know that Jack Nicklaus has alluded to it when he was playing, which is, are you there for the money, or are you there for the titles? And some people will say, well, I really want to be there for both. But if you had to choose, what would you choose? And I think there's players, depending upon where they are age-wise and what they've got left in the tank, obviously some people are going to look and say, well, I really want the money. But there's going to be other players. And a lot of these young guys, when they're coming on the scene, they know what it means to have the green jacket being put on your shoulders. They know what it means to pick up the Wanamaker trophy, or to have the claret jug, or to get the Jack Nicklaus gold medal because you're U.S. Open champion. Those are the things and the memories that the younger players want. The money will come and go, but the title, the name, to know that you'll always be at Augusta when you win the green jacket, those are the intangibles that can't be purchased. You're going to have to earn those, and you're going to have to be eligible to play. I think what's interesting about LIV is that it tried to create a separate universe, but I don't know how that universe is going to work given the format that it has. That's just my own personal opinion. I think it works for the players who want to capitalize on the quick cash. There's no doubt that that's happened. But I think that when you look at legacy, when you want to say at the end of the day, when you finish playing golf, how did you stack up to the Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus's, or even the contemporary players, the Brooks Koepkas and the Rory McIlroys? Major championships define legacy. And I think that's always going to be the issue for LIV and how this is ultimately going to be resolved, because the game does not benefit by being split with two different groups. I think golf has to have some unified vision, but it'll always come down to, you know, how is this going to get worked out? and what we will soon see happen. It's hard to say how that will happen because I don't know where the path is going to get merged. I think right now it's very undetermined about what will happen with professional golf.
Yeah, well, no question. I think at the end of the day, the people will speak and carry that weight, and there's room. There's plenty of room. There was years ago, there was an NBA and an ABA and an NFL and an AFL, and I mean, you got the American League and the National League. We made too big a deal. We made this too daggum complicated, way too complicated. These folks need to figure it out quick, get the big names back up top. That's the one thing that is aggravating is now some of the great names that people really want to watch, well, you can't find them week in and week out. And anyhow,
yeah, the thing about professional golf is it's getting younger on the men's side. I mean, for a long time, the women's game had a number of young, real young talent coming on the scene. And you know, it used to be on the men's side, it would take you maybe a few years to get acclimated, and then you start to show what you've got. But that's not the case anymore. I mean, you have guys now that come out, they've played AJGA events. In some cases, they haven't even played 4 years of college golf because they want to get out into the professional circuit. And you're seeing that. I mean, the generational switch in golf is already happening. And it's amazing when you think that Scottie Scheffler, I think, is 27 years old. And he's been out here now for a number of years. And then you see guys like Rory McIlroy, who's 34 years old. You know, there's a window that you have got to get to before it shuts on you. And these younger guys that are coming out, the talent that they have, it's now really about can they really show what they've got to play at the highest of levels in the biggest of events. That's always going to be the determining factor about how good a player you are. And they want to be tested. And they're pushing the envelope for what you see what these guys week to week are doing. Wyndham Clark is a great example of that, of a guy who really wanted to get tested. He proved it in winning at Los Angeles last year at the U.S. Open, and now he's continuing that going forward. So the boundaries for professional golf are really limitless, especially if you have that kind of desire, drive, and a talent to do what these guys are doing. It's amazing, and I think this is going to be a fantastic weekend. And as you said before, George, it's a great opening, you know, with Augusta coming right around the corner.
Beautiful warm-up, and Phil just sent me that 20 seconds. That's where we'll wind it up, and I know enjoy your weekend. I'll be pulling for Xander Schauffele, and I know you have it'll be fun seeing how it shakes out. And appreciate you being part of it with us, and thank you for that. And, Phil, until next week, TM High, enjoy your weekend, and shoot them low.
George, thank you. MJ, always a pleasure, my man. We'll talk to you again soon. MJ Ward from the Players. George Bryan from Points Unknown, but somewhere on a golf course, I'm sure. And it always amazes me, Chris, that I'm going to bring this up maybe next week. Every time I ride on I-20 through Augusta, and even get off on Washington Road, there is not a single sign that mentions Augusta National. I mean, we're talking about probably one of the 10 most revered pieces of sports earth on the planet.
Yeah.
Is that redundant? Pieces of sports earth that exists. I mean, really, one of the most hallowed pieces of sports ground that exists. And they don't want you to know it's there until...
Well, that's how you get to that hallowed ground. You don't let people know it's there. And if it weren't for, Bobby Jones Expressway, I think you wouldn't even know there was any influence in Augusta from the world of golf.
I mean, not even a little sign put in the ground that says, you know, Augusta National this way. That's just crazy, man. But that's the way they operate. And, you know, I do admire, you know, people think they're kind of snobbish and all that kind of stuff at Augusta. I admire the fact that they control their message and they control their product like nobody else does. And you can't buy them off.
Very true. Yep. And they've done a really, really good job of doing that. And from what I understand, I've never been to the Masters, but from what I understand, they have not tried to, you know, put the price gouging on the backs of their fans either, which has probably made them even more popular with golf fans.
Hey, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, Chris.
Yes, sir.
And thank you, Josh. Great job. Yep. Everybody have a great weekend. See you Monday.